We will be visiting one of the most popular temples in all of South India. Of course, there are many very famous and well-known and often visited temples, but the Ananta Padmanabha Temple, Kerala, the most well-known temple. And this is, as we heard, when we visited the Adi Keshava Temple, the deity there is reclining. The head of the deity is facing north, the head of the deity here is facing south. They're head to head. And three altars again, because the reclining Lord Vishnu is really big. And there's a long and ancient history to the temple and to the deity. And I'll hopefully have time to narrate that later. Today is the appearance or disappearance of Dev Goswami. Who knows from the schedule? It's either the appearance or disappearance day of Jayadev Goswami. So I'd like to speak something about Jayadev Goswami, something about the deity and the history of the temple. And I'd like to now speak about King Kulashekar, who is 12 Alvars, who was king in Trivandrum, where was the capital of the Chera dynasty. If you recall, in the whole of South India, we stopped first in Madurai, and Madurai was the capital of the Pandya dynasty. And over here on this side, the Chera dynasty with Trivandrum as its capital. And the Chola dynasty with its capital in Tanjore, less fixed than here. Here is very, very ancient, as with Madurai. So the Chera dynasty king, who was the father of Kulashekar, lived about 5,000 years ago, according to this history. So sometime around the appearance of Krishna. Sometime after that, certainly, because the first of the Alvars was Nam Alvar, and at the very end of his life, Kulashekar visited a number of the prominent Sri Vaishnava temples, one of them being the Adi Jagannath temple and the place where Nam Alvar resided. So very, very early, in any case. Early. His father was named Dhritha Vrata Maharaj. And Dhritha Vrata Maharaj was a great devotee, as were the Chera dynasty kings. They had a practice that's, as far as I understand, still maintained today, even though the king of Trivandrum doesn't have position like he did during the time of kings. But twice a day, the kings would come and give a report to the deity, because their understanding was the deity was the king, and they were the servant of the deity, and so they would come and give their report to the king in whose service they were acting. That was the tradition. And large consciousness. So, King Dhritarashtra fervently offered prayers to Ananta Padmanabha that he would not only have a son, but have a son who would become a saint. And so it happened. His son was born, according to Sri Vaishnava tradition, as a plenary portion of the Lord's Kastubha gem. Kastubha gem is, along with the mark of Srivatsa, mark that specifically in the personality of Godhead. And in his childhood, I chose to speak about Kulashekhar because Prabhupada was very fond of King Kulashekhar. And towards the end you'll recognize, I will recite some of his Krishna Tadiya Parapanjara Pankarantam. Prabhupada would sing, and then he would sing it again and sing it again. He really liked King Kulashekhar's writings. You'll see. Maybe you'll probably recognize. So in any case, as a young man, he was trained by his father in all the proper ways of government, warfare, ruling, the munificence of a king, the duty of protection of the king, the duty to know the scriptures and uphold the scriptures and see that all classes of citizens were abiding by the scriptures. And Dhritarashtra was so moved the unique qualifications of his son that at a very early age he installed his king as prince regent, and as was the way of qualified kings, he went to the forest for a life of simplicity and simply fulfilling and perfecting his life in devotion to the Supreme Lord. So Kulashekhar became eventually the king, and as the ruling king he exhibited fantastic qualities. His power as a military leader king was so fantastic that all of the other dynasties, the Chola and Pandya dynasties, came under his rule. He was so skilled. And at the same time, while he was very powerful, he was deficient. He was understood as being very fair, very respectful, very kind, while at the same time very strong. And as a result, those that were under his rule, the kings and the citizens that were under his rule, had the greatest regard for him. He was especially effective as a king, flawless administrator. He kept peace in his kingdom. He himself exhibited a life of virtue. So it was, everything was flourishing very nicely in his kingdom. And he followed the same standard as his predecessors. Daily, twice daily, he would come before the Ananta Padmanabha temple and give the report, the treasury report, the military report, the administrative report in service to Anantaba. However, although he did all of those things as his predecessor king ancestors had done, he was not as spiritually fit or fixed as they were. And attachment was there in his heart. And this carried on for some time. Now, the ministers and the citizens, they were fine because he was ruling very nicely. But in turn, considered himself independent, an independently powerful ruler, leader of virtue, and so forth and so on. And this went on for a long time. He ruled for a long, long duration. But by design, by Krishna's design, providential design, slowly a transformation started to take place in his consciousness. He started to see in those who he was dealing with selfishness, calculation, control, pride, arrogance, conceit, and all the unwholesome things that go along with material existence. And as well, those same traits in himself. By nature, someone who is very strong, very effective, very powerful, the tendency for pride gets in the way. And he didn't like that. So the stories about his life, that the Supreme Lord was acting from within his heart, saw those transformations take place, and so he sent a spiritual master. According to his biographers, it was Vishvaksena, the commander-in-chief of Lord Narayana's army. And under the guidance of his spiritual master, he became more thoroughly trained in the devotional scriptures and teachings. And the more that he heard from the scriptures, the more and more he became not only detached from his position as king and the unpleasantnesses that go with ruling, but he could see more and more the contaminated state of consciousness of people of this world. Identification with the body, becoming simply slaves to the dictates and demands, body. I'm thinking at the moment, well, there was a period in my life as a devotee, as a brahmachari, distributing books in airports. I just will make this quick. And one of the places that I was asked to go to when the Puerto Rico airport was made legal for book distribution was to go to San Juan, Puerto Rico, and distribute books. I thought, that's great. Go to San Juan, distribute books. And by circumstance, I learned more Spanish than the 5 years of studying French in high school, just by having to speak the language. And there were times we found by staying there, there was busier season and then slower season and so forth. So what we decided to do, the other brahmachari, was we wanted to go to some of the islands that are also tourist islands, without naming the names, of the Caribbean islands, and try our hand at distributing books in some of those places. Just like, you know, little variety, instead of just the airport, the fumes of the airport. So, the way to get to those islands was we got in a pontoon boat. You know, an airplane that doesn't have wheels, it just has floats. And you go get in the boat, and you go zooming across the lagoon and up in the air and flying over this island and that island, the other island, to get to places. Just sharing some observation. One island down there was a sugarcane forest. Somebody saw that's a good way to make some money, make sugarcane. Over there was a military installation. Somebody saw, oh, that would make a good place to make a military installation. And somebody over there, fishing village. And it struck me that it's the same place, but according to the consciousness of the person, they see the place as suitable for this or suitable for that, or suitable for another thing. Just based upon their desires. And the desires are based upon guna and karma, and so they transform earth into something that means sense gratification. So in a very deep and profound way, Kulashekhar was seeing like that. People are just, that's like using Prabhupada's language, bodies flapping, or the Srimad Bhagavatam, minus spiritual consciousness. It's no more meaning than a dead body flapping in the wind. Only the movement is, I want happiness this way, and somebody wants happiness in that way, and then those happinesses clash because same object that they want to become the enjoyer of, depending upon their consciousness. And he was rapidly losing interest in continuing as king. At the same time, being a virtuous man, he had some sense of duty. And so what he decided to do was to invite devotees of the Lord to come and read regularly and discuss regularly from the scriptures. And overcome his ministers who would maintain the government, and that way everything could go on. So that's the direction his life started to move in. And as he did like this, his spiritual consciousness just skyrocketed. For him, hearing from the scripture wasn't just like inspirational and soothing and pleasing, but rather just like describing the pastimes of the Lord, or hearing the pastimes of the Lord. What we describe about them is they're eternal. And we have this language that they're sometimes manifest, sometimes not manifest, like that. Like Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. When we go to Vrindavan, we're entering, at least ideally, we're entering into the abode of the Supreme Lord, where his pastimes are going on eternally. And qualified souls can see that. They can see the pastimes, they can enter into the pastimes, even today. We discussed that during our yatra in Vrindavan. And same through Brahma Samhita. Qualified Vaishnavas can actually enter into the pastimes of Krishna, and then come back to this realm and describe those pastimes of Krishna to us, worldly people. There's no difference except the difference of consciousness. So King Kulashekhar's consciousness was such that as he was hearing from the scripture, he was experiencing the manifest pastimes of the Lord. And in the course of his continuing in this direction, he began gathering the sayings of the scripturalizations of the scripture, which later became his writings, his qualification as an Alavar was that he wrote these beautiful descriptions of the Lord. The Tamil translation of the word Alavar is one who is drowned in love of God. And similarly, one who is drowned in love of God can drown others in love of God. So his love of God became deeper and deeper and deeper, and he began writing. Mukundamala Stotra is that scripture which Prabhupada liked to quote from, actually sing, because they're songs. And one of his most, of all the writings, he became progressively more and more a Ram Bhakta, a devotee of Lord Ram. So he liked very much hearing from Valmiki Ramayana. And once again, when he was hearing Valmiki Ramayan, he was participating, was real time. It was eternal time, real time kind of participation in the pastimes that he was hearing. So one time he became so absorbed in hearing the big battle that was taking place between Ram and the two brothers, or two of the brothers of Ravana, Kara and Dushan. Suparnaka had found Sita, or had found Ram, Lakshman and Sita in Janasthan, and transformed herself into a beautiful looking person, although she was a Rakshasi, in a very brash way, stood right before Ram and said, "You would make a suitable husband for me. Come with me. I take you to so many places. I have mystic powers. I can take you here and there, and we can enjoy together." She was speaking as if no one else was present. And Ram gestured to Lakshman and said, "Well, I'm already married, but he's a very qualified person. I think he'd be a very suitable person for you." So her mind just went to Lakshman, and Lakshman again returned Sita's attention to Ram, and she said, "It's only her that's standing in the way between you and me." So lunged at Sita to devour her. And that's too much. Lakshman, stop her. And cut off her nose. And she started screaming and went running to where brothers and the army of 14,000 Rakshasas were making their camp, because that was kind of like an outpost for Ravan. And she screamed, "What kind of brother are you? See this disgrace that's been made by this earthling, this regularly ordinary human being, and you stand there and do nothing." Like, fire him up. "Wait a minute, tell me what happened. What are you just screaming and screaming?" And she made up a story about how something other than what happened. And he just whimsically and cruelly, "Cut off my nose, look at this. Get revenge." And so the 14,000 soldiers, along with Karan Dushan leading them, went charging to take revenge against Ram and Lakshman. And when the soldiers were coming, Ram said, "Sita must be protected. Lakshman, you take her to a safe place." And there's a place in that area where Sita was put into a little cave. Lakshman standing at the front of the cave to protect Sita. And Ram stone to meet the entire army of Karan Dushan, powerful generals. And as King Kulashekar was hearing this narration, he jumped up, said, "What kind of king am I when Ram is alone facing 14,000 soldiers, and Sita, the goddess of fortune, is in danger, and Lakshman cannot even help him, and I'm sitting comfortably in my palace. Gather the army at once, and we're going to go do battle and defeat and help Ram destroy Karan Dushan and the whole army." He's the king. And the king has given a command. So the generals were wondering, This took place thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, and our king thinks it's going on now, but ooh, he's so determined. And so they gathered their army and started marching. And they weren't marching fast enough. Faster, faster, faster. Ram is standing alone against this whole army. They thought their king had gone mad. They didn't know what to do. So the ministers made a plan. They sent an advance party. We're going to make sure everything is okay. And the advance party came back. Said, it's okay. We just got word. The battle is over. Ram single-handedly defeated Kar and Dushan and all of the 14,000 Rakshasas. And Sita is safe. She's again united with Ram. Everything is okay. So the king said, "That then we'll go back. Sita is safe." So their whole army went back to Trivandrum. The minister then advised the reciters of the scripture, from now on, don't read the bad parts. Just read the happy parts. So the Vaishnavas were happy to read the happy parts. But what happened is, one day, the reciter assigned to serve, to read, had to leave on some service for the day. So he requested an assistant to tell him, you know, you read today, I'll be back tomorrow. But he forgot to tell him, don't read the bad parts. So guess which part he read? Sita being kidnapped. Ooh. And the whole description of Marichi and Ram going after me and Lakshman being insulted by Sita and Lakshman pleading with her, how can you speak like this? Please, it's too heavy. You can't say these things. I have no such interest other than service to Ram, and service to Ram is to protect you. He gave me his order, don't leave your side. I'll kill myself, protect Ram. Didn't you hear the voice? And so Lakshman left. Ravana came, spoke in the way that Ravana spoke, and then he grabbed Sita and carried Sita away. Jatayu tried to stop, and Jatayu was killed or maimed and fell from the sky, and Ravana went soaring through the air, and Sita dropped her jewels on Rishimukh Mountain, heading for Lanka. King Kulashekar jumped up. Sita has been kidnapped by this terrible Rakshasa. Let us take our entire army and go relieve Sita from being in the clutches of Ravana. So they had to do it again. The entire army headed for the South Sea. You know how long it takes to get there. We came by bus. They were just going on foot and horses, and King Kulashekar was holding his sword in the air. I will slay Ravana myself. I am a powerful king. He has kidnapped the goddess of fortune, the eternal associate of Lord Ram. Faster, faster, faster. And they got all the way to the edge of the sea. And you know the distance. 100 yojanas, 800 miles. King Kulashekar didn't stop. With his sword raised in the air, he went wading out into the sea. Ravana, you coward, stand and fight. Kept going. And he was swimming out in the sea with his sword raised in the air, calling loud voice, and
army didn't know what to do. Our king has gone crazy.
Just then, Lord Ram and Sita appeared in the sky before King Kulashekar and said, "We have good news. Ravana has been slain. The entire Rakshasa army is destroyed. And now here is Sita again by my side. King Kulashekar, everything is all right. You could go back to your palace now." But he was so deep in the water that Lord Ram descended and carried the king back to the shore and then disappeared. The ministers were really determined. They don't want this to happen again. But they were in a dilemma because they wanted the king to be the king. He was a good king. But they saw that the problem was these Vaishnavas that were telling him all these Puranic stories, and he would get so excited and get carried away. So when they came back, every day the king would have a festival. He would hear a story, and on his order, the royal treasury was used to hold a festival on behalf of the personality of Godhead for this and that, and at the end of the day, distributing prasadam to everybody. And then he started to consider, "I really don't want to be king anymore. I want to go to shelter of Ranganath." The ministers and the leading personalities of the country, the nation, they were beside themselves what to do. And the only thing they could think to do was somehow relieve this connection that the Vaishnavas had upon the king. So they came up with a dirty plan. Their plan was they would tell the king that in the treasury of deity of Anantapadmanabha that had so many, many jewels and valuable items, that a most precious necklace belonging to the deity was stolen. And they did an investigation and they concluded the Vaishnavas has stolen the necklace of the deity. And so they wanted to hold a trial, and they wanted to severely punish the Vaishnavas. They told this to King Kulashekar. King Kulashekar was adamant. "This is not possible. I'll prove it to you it's not possible. Bring a big vessel, a big pot, with many poisonous cobras in it, covered, right now. I'm the king, on my order." And they quickly brought what the king had asked for. And he said, "I am going to thrust my arm into this pot, poisonous cobras. And if the Vaishnavas have stolen from Vishnu, which is not possible, but if they've done so, let the cobras bite me and I'm at once dead. And if I'm not harmed, then you should accept. This is convincing evidence it didn't happen." And without saying a further word, he plunged to that pot of poisonous cobras, stirred it around, and lifted his arm out. The ministers were shocked at this whole exhibition. He had such faith in the Lord and the devotees of the Lord. And so they acknowledged, "Actually, the Vaishnavas didn't steal the necklace. We did. But we were in so much anxiety we didn't know what to do, because you go into these fits where you lose contact with reality. We thought you had, and we were trying to separate you from the Vaishnavas, and We did a very bad thing. So, like Lord Ram, receiving this sincere apology from the wrongdoers, he forgave them. But he also decided, I don't want to have anything to do with these worldly people anymore. I want to be with Ranganath. And so he turned the kingdom over to his son, who he named the same as his father, Dhritavrata. His son became king, and Kulashekhar went to Sri Rangam along with his daughter. And he gave his daughter in marriage to Ranganath. It wasn't the same as what happened with Andal, where she merged into the body of Ranganath. But that was his. He was the Lord. His daughter should marry the Lord and no one else. And so this most eminently qualified Vaishnava, they just accepted. His daughter became the wife of Ranganath for her life. And there he remained in Sri Rangam for many, many, many years, just very contentedly worshipping the Supreme Lord and writing his different writings, most famous of which is Mukundamala Stotra. And I'm just going to read. He lived for 67 years. His biography says that although most of the time he spent in Sri Rangam, as other Alvars did, he visited other temples of the Lord and composed his beautiful songs about them. So I'm going to read a few of them, hopefully. One is found in Canto 2, Chapter 4, Text 20. This is it's verse number 34 of his Mukundamala Stotra. Something like just 67 verses or something like that. No, that's not the right number. Some modest number, Mukundamala Stotra, which Prabhupada began a translation of and later his disciples completed. I wish I could sing it nicely. Where is our Sanskrit reciter, Mataji? Do you know this? Where is she? Where is she? Shyamakund, where's your wife? Come forward. Can you recite this prayer of King Kulashekhar? Where's the other microphone? It's 3 o'clock, so we have to go quickly. Just one verse. She sings so nicely. Here's the verse. Do your best, and it'll be better than what I can do. Krishna Padiya.
Krishna Tvadiya Pada Pankaja Panjarantam Adyaiva Me Vishatu Manasa Raja Hamsa Prana Prayana Samaya Kapavata Pittai Kantha Varodhana Vidho Smaranam Kutaste.
Translation.
My Lord Krishna, I pray that the swan of my mind may immediately sink down to the stems of the lotus feet of your lordship and be locked in their network. Otherwise, at the time of my final breath, when my throat is choked up with cough, how will it be possible to think of you?
I think our Chinese devotees can't understand. But here's, you take a look at these, 7, 8, these few verses. I'm going to read the translation again. This is Prabhupada's translation. My Lord Krishna, I pray that the swan of my mind may immediately sink down to the stems of the lotus feet of your lordship and be locked in their network. Otherwise, at the time of my final breath, when my throat is choked up with, how will it be possible to think of you? Prabhupada spoke many times on this verse where when our energy is vital, because he was speaking to the young Western, you know, followers, now that my life energy is strong and my mind is strong, let me now enter into the stem of the lotus of your lotus feet, like the swan. Because later on, when my life becomes old and choked up with cough and mucus, how will I call your name? Let me call your name now with full enthusiasm. Go ahead.
Chintayami harim eva santatam mandahasyamuditanam ambujam nandagopatanayam paratparam naradadimuni vrindavanditam.
Translation. This is from a Kundamala Stotra. I always think of Lord Hari Krishna, whose joyful lotus face bears a gentle smile. Although he is the son of the cowherd Nanda, he is also the supreme truth, worshipped by great sages like Narada.
Karacharana saroje kanti man netramine shramamushi bhuja vichi vyakule gadamarge hari sharasi vighayapiya tejo jaulagham bhavamaru parikhinna klesha madhya tyajami.
The desert of material existence has exhausted me, but today I will cast aside all troubles by diving of Lord Hari and drink freely of the abundant waters of His splendor. The lotuses in that lake are His hands and feet, and the fish are His brilliant shining eyes. The lake's waters relieve all fatigue, and is agitated by the waves His arms create. Its current flows deep beyond fathoming. So nice.
Sarasi janayane shankha chakre murabhidi maviram asvachittarantum shukataram aparam na jatu jane Hari charana smaranamritena tulyam.
Oh mind, please never stop taking pleasure in thinking of the Mura demon's destroyer, Krishna, who has eyes and bears the conch and disc weapon. Indeed, I know of nothing else that gives such extreme pleasure as meditating on Lord Hari's divine feet. Two more.
Bhavajaladi gatanava vatahantam shutadutir kalatratrana bhararditanam vishama vishayatoyam ajatam aplavanam bhavati sharanam eko vishnu pota naranam.
The people in this vast ocean of birth and death are being blown about by the winds of material dualities as they flounder in the perilous waters of sense indulgence with no boat to help them. They are sorely distressed by the need to protect their sons, daughters, and wives. Only the Lord Vishnu can save them.
Bhavajaladhim agadham dustaram nistareyam katham aham iti ceto masmaga kataratvam sarasi jadrishi devatara ki bhakti reka narakabhidi nishannarayishyati avashyam.
Dear mind, do not bewilder yourself by anxiously thinking, how can I cross this fathomless and impassable ocean of material existence? There is only one who can save you, devotion. If you offer her to the lotus-eyed Lord Krishna, the killer of Narakasura, she will carry you across this ocean without fail. To be continued. There's more.